Now, back to the Eric Stewart Show on WMAL.
Hey, in the next 2 decades, individuals aged 65 and older will come to represent 1 of every 5 U.S. citizens and, more importantly, control more than half of all discretionary income. So says Andrew Carl. Right now, I want to jump into university-based retirement communities, a new idea. Tell us.
Well, again, what we're talking about is putting more flavors on the shelf, more products on the shelf, more variety on the shelf for baby boomers as they retire. You know, the baby boomers, we've exploded the portfolio of products in every industry with which we've come into contact throughout our lives. So my point is when we get to senior housing, we're not going to settle for just a couple of choices. We're going to want lots and lots of choices. We are the most highly educated demographic in history, so we're university-based retirement communities, or as I call them, UBRCs, are very appealing to us. But we're also looking at retirement communities for different cultures, for different orientations, for different interest groups. You know, NoHo Senior Arts Community out in Los Angeles is a retirement community, for example, for retired musicians and artists. Rainbow End is a retirement community in Livingston, Texas, believe it or not, for people who are retired in their RVs. We've got 300,000 retirees in this country who don't have a house. They live in their RV, and they'd like to stay in their RV when they retire. So they've actually bought and operate, essentially, an RV retirement community in Texas for that particular niche population. Mm-hmm. We're looking at communities for different cultures. America is a very diverse country. Aegis Gardens is an assisted living community just outside of San Francisco for retired Asian Americans. They have feng shui architecture. All the staff speak Mandarin, Cantonese, Japanese. Hmm. They have the stone lions out front. They can, you know, celebrate their culture. We see retirement communities for different orientations. You know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 4 to 7% of our population are LGBT, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender populations. So we're seeing about a dozen retirement communities in the country now being built just for that population. So, you know, almost any kind of a niche group or a cultural group or an interest group that you can think of, because there's 80 million of us, we could probably build a retirement community for them and do quite well.
I would imagine the marketing is not based upon sex, creed, color, or orientation, right? Because
right.
That would be a violation of the Fair Housing Act.
Absolutely.
But it becomes by reputation?
Sure. Okay. I mean, look at Aegis Gardens. It was designed, feng shui architecture, wok cooking. They don't use the number 4 because that's a bad number in Asian culture. They don't use the color blue because that's a bad color in Asian culture. Now, anyone's welcome to live there. But what it really does is it provides an opportunity for a particular culture to get what they want. So, for example, you know, why should an 80-year-old Asian American woman in the San Francisco Bay Area have as her only choice in assisted living room number 144 with blue walls? she shouldn't have to have that as her only choice.
Right. She should be on the 8th floor in number 88 in a
right.
yellow.
But in a community like Aegis Gardens, she doesn't have to worry about making that choice because there is no number 4. There is no color blue.
Right.
So it's just, now that doesn't mean that, you know, you have to be Asian to live there. Anyone's welcome to live there.
Right.
Same with LGBT communities. Obviously, anyone's welcome to live there, but we've got an entire generation of LGBT in our generation, the first generation who, after decades of being in the closet, were finally able to come out, and to be quite blunt, a lot of them were worried about having to go back into the closet when they need an assisted living community.
Hmm.
Well, they shouldn't have to be making those choices.
Mm-hmm.
They ought to be able to have a choice. Not all LGBT resident seniors want to live in an LGBT community, but those who do, those types of communities should be available to them.
Okay, besides the community itself that's being developed for that specific interest that a person might have, are we going to see them actually become incorporated into new condominium developments where there's just one floor, or do you see anything like that?
Yes, no, absolutely, because I think, again, it's about putting the flavors on the shelf and having people be able to pick out the ones that they want. And that's not about, you know, that's not about segregating people or discriminating against one group or another. That's about a population of nearly 80 million baby boomers who have a variety of interests, who want more choices in senior housing than just a nursing home or an assisted living or a continuing care retirement community, but frankly, they all kind of look alike, and you could just change the sign out front and who would know the difference. We're going to want more than that, and that's all that we're saying as we get there is, look, if you build something for us that really takes to a much higher level and to many more degrees our choices of where we can live, there's enough of us to probably fill up those communities.
Andrew Carl, Department of Health Administration and Policy at George Mason University College of Health and Human Services, thank you for joining me today.
You're very welcome. Thanks.
Appraisers don't know what your home is worth the second that they walk in the door, okay? You might think that an appraiser knows the value of the property as soon as they see it, but they don't. And in fact, you think about assessing your property by the local tax assessor. They've never even been in your house. How could they possibly know what the proper assessment is? An appraiser also doesn't know how much to appraise your property until they get comparable listings, and they need to get them from right near where you live. Homes that are similar in style, location, footage that have sold within the past few years, they're going to come to your house, determine your condition and quality, as well as any other factors that would affect the cost of the home, and use that information along with the comps to make an accurate assessment. So you want to prep your space and the occupants for the appraiser coming by. You do not want clothes all over the floor. You want things to look nice. You want it to present it in its best way possible so that the appraiser says, wow, these people take care of this house. You're selling to the appraiser like you would to the buyer. You want to make sure you get your paperwork in order. Make sure you've got a copy of not the tax assessment, but the survey if you have it, or a floor plan to make his job easier. And a list even of all the improvements that you've made would also help an appraiser. Don't put too much stock in your home improvements. Sometimes sellers think that their house is worth gold, like I said a couple of weeks ago, because they've put fresh paint on the walls or they've refinished their hardwood floors. Frankly, you're really looking at a fraction of what you do in improved value to come back to you. If you look at the Market Ready Guide, the free downloadable guide at ericstewartgroup.com, tells you how to get the house ready. In a few minutes, I'm gonna cover the questions you should ask a realtor. That's in there as well. I broke out 3 pages of what do you actually get for what you do, including kitchens. Frankly, kitchens don't make you twice as much as what you put into it. They usually make you less than what you put into it. Windows, people call me and they ask me, should I put new windows in before I sell? No. No, windows are to be put in 5 years before you sell, so you can get the savings and the comfort that the windows provide. They're only going to give you 40% return on what you've spent on the windows, all right? And you don't want to engage in listing puffery, okay? Before listing, make sure you and your realtor take a realistic look at what your home actually offers. Are you including the basement square footage in the total? Well, you should. Are you hoping no one will notice your roof isn't new? Well, they will. Prepare yourself ahead of time with pragmatic estimates that are going to really help ease the appraisal process. Above all, don't fudge numbers, okay? Puffery is illegal. You should not. In fact, you will cause yourself damage as a real estate agent. We do not want to commit puffery, overstating what a house has. In reality, you will have it bite you on the back end if you do. So, to hire a good realtor, how do you know what a good realtor is when you haven't sold your house in many, many years? Or maybe you've, you know, Aunt Lucy is a realtor, or maybe, you know, your neighbor, or maybe you see somebody's signs all the time and they, you know, maybe you've got somebody who seems to be a dominant agent, but you don't know. You just see their signs a lot and you think, I should probably call them. They sell a lot of houses. Folks, don't go there. Don't hire people just because you see signs. People can be very good at marketing and really bad at selling. They can be really good at marketing themselves and really bad at selling the value in your home. So choose your agent wisely. There are 10 questions that you should ask a realtor before you hire one. Okay? In essence, I think the most important question you can ask is, would you please tell me why I should consider hiring you? And then put your hand over your mouth if you have to. Don't say anything and just sit and let the agent talk. It might get uncomfortable. They might say one sentence and you can just sit there and look at them and be quiet. Let them talk, write down what they say, be careful in the interview process to find out what they really think they can do, okay? 9 more to come right here on The Eric Stewart Show. We'll be right back.